Okay, we're going to get started. Hello, I'm Kathy Curtis, and I'm the chair of the Bay Gourmet Forum for the Commonwealth Club. my one fan club. I've met many of you before, and thank you for coming to this program. It's going to be a really nice program, as you can tell how organized it is. I think I had 30 emails today from Alan about maybe, yeah, something like that. So I wanted to tell you before I introduce Alan, we get started very quickly, about some upcoming Bay Gourmet programs. Some of you have the flyer on your chair, and we have how many East Bay folks are here? Great. You have to come to Cesar on Monday, May 24th, for the tequila and Latino cuisine dinner. And there will be an expert on hand on tequila, Joanne Weir, who is a local cookbook author, and also Maggie, the chef at Cesar, will be there to talk about the cuisine. Cesar recently changed from the tapas menu that they have in Berkeley. How many have been to Cesar? Yeah. In Piedmont, they're doing Latino cuisine now instead of what they were doing before in Berkeley. And it's very good. I've been there a couple of times. And then on Thursday, May 27th in San Francisco, an evening of locavore delights. We have Temer Costa, who is just releasing a book called Farmer Jane. It is such a good book. I'm reading it right now. She went all over the country interviewing women farmers. And like Full Belly Farm, for example, right in the Capé Valley, a couple of women started that farm. And it's a fascinating book. And she will be there talking to Davia Nelson of the Kitchen Sisters. You're familiar with the radio program and NPR. And we're going to do a cooking class. There's a lot going on that night. There'll be a cooking class, this conversation, wine, eating, whole bunch of fun. So that's in Dog Patch at the Hands-On Gourmet Kitchen. And then there's a Venezuelan tasting dinner on June 28th. I'll speed this up a little because those are later out. You'll hear a lot about these. And then eating locally on a budget in June. There will be programs in July, and in August, the club is doing a series on women called The Ascent of Women. Whole month of programs, all the member-led forums are getting together, like we did one on money. I don't know if you've been members a long time. We had a series on water issues, on money last year, on China. This year, it's women. So I'm really excited about that. One last thing, California Book Awards, which is one of the best evenings at the club, is on June 3rd. So all the authors will be here, and there'll be food and wine and talk and fun. Okay, so on to tonight's wine tasting. I met Alan at a salon in the city, and a woman that opens up her house every month to a gathering of strangers. She lets all these people in she doesn't know. And Alan is right at the front of the place pouring wine and talking about wine, which is great. So we met there, and we decided to do this here at the club. And he is a cellar master, and he has a certified specialist of wine degree certification. And he does all kinds of things with wine. He teaches about wine. He does corporate events. He does nonprofit events. He will help you fill a cellar for an hourly fee, which I think is really cool. I've never seen that before. And also will help you design a cellar. So he's got a great website, knows a lot about wine, has been in wine since 1984. He was in advertising in wine and has a lot of education. And I want to welcome you, and we can't wait to hear what you have to say. And we're going to have some fun. We're doing a blind tasting, right? Yeah.
Blind tasting?
So help me welcome Alan.
Thank you. You're
welcome. Thank you very much, Kathy. Yeah, I do, Alan Abrams, and I, like she says, I do a lot of different things around wine, and I do all the fun things with the things that you don't have to grow grapes to do, because that's really, it's more like work. So designing wine cellars or doing wine tastings as fundraisers for nonprofits, that's a lot of fun, and getting to interact with people that have fun drinking the wine or tasting the wine. Sometimes you spit it out, but not here. So today what we're going to do is taste some wines and hopefully get a few tips on how to enjoy the wines and how to tell one wine from the other, and then hopefully enjoy these. These are all limited production wines, which means that they didn't make very much of the wine, and generally they mean that they're more expensive, but not these really aren't terribly expensive wines. If while we're doing all this, if anybody has any questions, just throw your hand up, ask the question. Don't wait, because then you'll forget it. And as you're drinking along or tasting along, if you don't want to finish each glass, you don't have to drink at all. That's so if you want to, most people do. So speaking of drinking the wines, don't start drinking until I give you the go-ahead, because we have a few things to take care of, like details. What are we doing here? Okay, there are 10 rounds, so you'll be tasting these wines. There's only five of them there, so you'll be tasting each one twice, which means on the first round, if you drink it all, the second round is not as much fun. And with each round or each wine that we taste, we're going to have a wine trivia question. Okay, that'll be fun. And what happens is that for each wine, well, the way the wines are set out, you can see there's five circles, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and each one is a particular wine. And then you'll notice that there are five wines there. Strangely enough, they don't match up. So, which is the definition of a semi-blind tasting. You know what you're tasting, you just don't know which one at which time. So we'll be going through each one of the wines and going through we'll go through each of the wines, and then you will pair that wine with one of these descriptions. Then at the end, everyone that you get correct, you'll get 1 point. And with the wine trivia questions, everyone you get correct, you'll get 1 point. And then whoever gets the most points at the end gets all the empty bottles, plus the corks. No, we have a small prize, very, very small prize. We have a limited budget here, so. But anyway, there'll be a prize, and you'll get bragging rights for, you know, a week or so. So, and when you're grading, you get to grade yourself, but there's somebody next to you that's going to be watching. So we're on the honor system, but, you know, you can get caught. And so everybody should have a pen. Everybody should have one of these expensive trivia answer forms. And you can see there's five answers. And then there's a TB, which means tiebreaker, in case there's a tie. You never know. And everyone should have five glasses of wine with a taste. Oops, that's got the answers. With the descriptions of all the wines. Okay, so that's the way it works. Now, what we're going to do, the way we're going to do this is with a kind of an interesting system, and it's called the six S's of wine tasting. And we're not drinking yet, so we don't do that. We have two white wines, and as you can see there, we have a Chardonnay, we have a Riesling, not a sweet Riesling, dry Riesling. We have a Pinot, a Zinfandel, and a Cabernet. So it's not going to be horribly difficult. It's not like we had five Cabernets. You have to line up. So, but anyway, the six S's is, I'll get my empty glass here. There's the C, the swirl, the sniff, the sip, the slosh, then you have a choice, which is always nice in wine tasting. You can spit it out, and you can use that cup if you really want to do that, or you can put water in it, or you can swallow it. That's your alternative. And then there's a seventh optional one, which is, if you're taking notes, it's scribble. So you're taking notes. So let's do the six S's together. Pick up the wine with the red dot. Does anybody have trouble with colors? I mean, you never know. Green and blue. So got the red dot. Don't drink it yet. So what we're doing is, when we do the C, we're checking the color. And why do you do that? Well, if you have a white wall, which we don't have here, or you have some light, you can hold it up. You can check the color of the wine. You do that a couple of reasons. Now, white wines and red wines obviously have different reasoning, but if you have a white wine that's a darker color, and you know it's a young wine, and say it's a deep gold or a brown, then you know that something is a little old in your glass, and you may want to take a smaller sip of it. With red wines, you know, they start out as a purple color, then they get to brick, as they age, they get to brick red, and then they get to kind of a brownish color, and that's not good either. So you can tell age just by looking at the color of the wine. If you want to tell the depth of the color, not what the color is, and you have a white mat like several of you do, you can put the wines on the top of the mat and you look down into the wine. So that's how you can tell how deeply colored the wines are. Okay, so we have seen this wine. Now we are going to swirl this wine. The safe way to do it is to put it on a table and just go around like this. Oh, it's a doggy. No wine for the dog. Seriously. Okay. So you can do it like this, but sometimes if you have a red wine and a white shirt, it doesn't work out so well. But this way, at least you have a platform. Now, swirl. This is the way you get the aroma. Now, if you don't swirl, you can just stick your nose in there and see what's going on. But when you do swirl, you put wine on the inside of the glass. And it makes more surface area that can release the aroma from the wine. I don't know, everybody hear that? I'll just stay here. And when you're swirling, the idea at a wine tasting anyway is you fill it about one-third full. That leaves two-thirds to gather that aroma. And then you just plow your nose as far in there as it'll go and see what you can tell. Now, couple of things. Again, you can tell faults. Like if you've ever, anybody ever smelled corked wine? Three lucky people. Four. Okay. It's not real good. It's like wet cardboard or wet dog or something. It's not good. And there's all kinds of things that can go wrong with a wine, and you can tell it with your nose. Okay, except, you know, you want this one-third full. If you happen to be in a bar or at a dinner, you want them to put as much wine in the glass as you can. That's sort of a different dynamic. Anyway, so you've swirled. You have stuffed your nose in there as far as you can. And so you're looking for faults, and you're also looking for, what does this wine remind me of? Is it fruit? Like this white wine. What What does somebody smell? Is it fruit? Is it gravel? Is it? I got an apple here. Anybody get anything different? Rug? Any dog? Good.
Very light floral.
A light floral. That's fair. And there's no right answer in this for sure, because it's your nose, and whatever you smell is what you smell. But it does give you a hint as to which one of these wines you're looking at. Okay, the next, and this is the big chance. We're sipping, but not the whole thing. Remember, you're coming back. You're going to, once I tell you what the wines are, we get to taste it again, and then you can see where you got it right. So, sipping. Just take a small amount of the wine, and then you slosh it around all over inside your mouth. Does everybody know about the techniques for getting that taste all over your mouth? There's one. This is a chewer down here. You can take the wine in, kind of chew it around. There's another more dangerous way to do it, and that's when you put the wine, you hold it in the bottom of your mouth, and then you carefully suck air in over the wine, and it makes it bubble and bubble, and it releases aromas and taste, but you can also choke. So, not supposed to, and it's not, it only lasts for a while, but it only has to. And the yes.
Well, what about gargling?
You could.
Mine is not the most sophisticated way.
It isn't, actually. You're right. The question was, what about gargling? You could do that, and it would work. It's just one of, if you're by yourself or something, that would work.
If you said slosh it up in front of your mouth and everything.
Everywhere, inside. Because one theory is that your tongue has different places that can tell different types of flavors, like, bitter or salty or sweet. And then there's other theories that says it's baloney. But, I'm not a doctor. I play one on TV. Yeah. But you just don't want to have too much in there where you have to swallow. But you got to have enough that you can get it around. Yes.
When you're swirling, sometimes what some people call
legs.
Glisten or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What is that really?
I remember the first time anybody ever told me about legs, and he said the longer the legs, the higher quality of the wine, which is not true. It's usually the more legs it has, the more alcohol it has in it. But it doesn't really tell you that much about anything. So it's neat to look at if you're a leg man or woman, whatever. Okay. Oh, and the other thing about drawing the air in over the wine is that then it goes past your mouth and back up into your nose, where you can smell it again, even through your mouth, in the retronasal area back there. So we have, you've probably already done the last S. Swallow, unless you're just like that. Okay. And if you don't need to scribble, but if you want to do that, that's fine. So what we've got now is wine. Oh, let's do a wine trivia question. You'll need that pen, and if you don't have to put your name on there, but it was there on the form. So here we go. And this is sort of apropos here. Which is more sensitive in evaluating wine? The eyes, the tongue, the nose, or the ears? So you just circle one of those A, B, C, D. A, eyes, B, tongue, C, nose, D, ears. Well, it should be most instead of more. Which is the most sensitive in evaluating wine? A, eyes, B, tongue, C, nose, D, ears. Okay. I think you probably finished that. We are on to wine number two, but we're going to grab the one with the clear dot. So it's sometimes called the other white wine. So you're going to be kind of on your own. We're going, but do, you know, go through this. Look at it. See the color. It should be slightly different than the first wine. But look at the color. Do the swirl. Smell it. You should smell a difference. And I didn't get any wine, so I'm going to grab that guy's wine. Do you smell any differences? I get a lot of nodding. That's good. What do we smell here? Citrus? Pineapple? It could be. On the taste, whoa, that's different. Taste different? Okay. So if you, between those two, if you can make a choice, put one of them on wine number one or wine number two, just guessing that you're going to pick one of those. And you make your choice. And the way we're going to be able to tell, like some, if you can actually put the wine there, because we're going to, at the end, the way we identify them is by the little dots, the color. So we're going to say, at the end, it's, you know, orange, pink, lemon, whatever. Okay. So everybody got, we all through with number two? Made your choices between, okay. Here is trivia question number two. And I can repeat these for you. By law, what does the term reserve mean when you see it on the label of a U.S. wine? A, it has been aged longer. B, it comes from select high-quality grapes. C, it is the winemaker's top quality wine. Or D, it doesn't mean anything. Repeat. By law, what does the term reserve mean when you see it on the label of a U.S. wine? A, it has been aged longer. B, it comes from select high-quality grapes. C, it is the winemaker's top-quality wine. Or D, it doesn't mean anything. Got it? Get it? Got it? Good. All right. Let's do The third wine, we're doing red wines now. Pick the one on the far left with the blue dot. It's a very sophisticated tasting. You got blue dots. Yes. You could serve them. I mean, it depends on the temperature you enjoy the wines served. White wines, like personally, I like them around 58 to 60 degrees. These were 58 to 60 when we opened the box, and then we poured them about 45 minutes ago, so they've probably warmed up a little bit. However, the warmer you taste a wine, the more of the actual taste you're going to be able to get, good or bad. So, I mean, if, you know, case in point, if you have like, you go home and get your box wine out of the refrigerator and you pull the little thing and you're drinking, 36 degree wine, it's probably not going to taste like much because it can't. It's too cold. Champagne is a different thing. But table wines, you'd like to have 60, 65 degrees. You know, people talk about, I like my wine room temperature. Well, that was when the rooms were back in England and they didn't have heating and things like that. Room temperature now is 70, 72 degrees. It depends if you're, saving money or not. But 70 or 72 degrees, for my taste, is too warm for red wine and certainly for white wine. So forget room temperature, unless you're in England. So, but yes, they would probably be a little cooler than this. And we're doing blue dot. So look at the color, look at your table mat, your placemat, and see what lines up with that. There's color. Some wines you just know what they are by the color, or at least it narrows down your choices. Take a sniff of the red wine. What are you smelling with this red?
Cherry.
Bagels. Oh, raisins. And the taste. What are we getting in the taste of this one? Strawberry. Okay. And where does the vanilla taste come from? The oak. So somebody put this wine in a barrel. So you get oak. And in a white wine, you'll taste some of the buttery part of that too. Generally not with the red, but... okay. So... take a pick. I mean, you can move, change your opinion later, but, take a pick of what you think it might be. Round three trivia question. Okay, ready? As grape berries are maturing on the vine over the summer, does the sugar content in the berries, A, decrease, B, increase, C, remain the same, or D, there is no sugar in grapes? Okay, as berries over time are maturing on the vine, does the sugar content of the berries A, decrease, B, increase, C, is remain the same, or D, there is no sugar in grapes?
Hmm? Is that Brie?
Brie?
Yeah. B-R-I-X.
Oh, bricks. yes. Basically, the sugar content. It's a percentage. Brie, I thought we were talking cheese for a second. He asked about bricks, which is a term where you can tell. It's a restaurant. You can tell the sugar, and they measure that, and then that helps tell. Well, obviously, there's sugar in wine, in the grapes. When to pick the grapes.
Sorry, did I give away?
No, that's all right. Okay, we're doing round, are we on four? Yes, round four. We should pick up a yellow dot wine. So we're evaluating it the same way. Look at the color. Is this one a different color than our blue dot? Slightly different? What about the nose? What are we smelling here? What's that?
Green pepper.
Anything beside peppers? A dark fruit, black fruit, plums, blackberries. And we're tasting, kind of a peppery. That's been known to be said about this wine. Any other kinds of flavors we're getting? Nope. Okay. So from that, look at the two or three reds. See if you can place this wine on one of those little circles. Okay. Everybody got it done? Okay. Now we have another trivia question. Okay, here you are. What is the main reason, there may be more than one, but what's the main reason you should not store wine or other alcohol beverages in lead crystal containers for long periods of time, like a month or more? And it's not because it's going to go bad, but it's A, it's just too showy. B, all alcohol beverages will go bad over time, over a long time. C, you could get lead poisoning. Or D, decanters are not meant for long-term storage. A, well, I'll read it again. What's the main reason you should not store wine or other alcohol beverages in lead crystal decanters for long periods of time? A, it's just too showy. B, all alcohol beverages will go bad over a long period of time. C, you can get lead poisoning. Or D, decanters are not meant for long-term storage. Okay, got your answers? Okay, moving on, round five. Your options are dwindling here. The green dot. What's the green one? Ooh. Okay. What's in a nose? What are we smelling here?
Jam.
Jam? Anything else? What kind of jam? Strawberry jam? Raspberries? What was that? Raspberry jam, strawberry jam. Something jam. Okay. How about the taste? Does it taste like it smells? Or does it taste like something else? I heard a That's a sophisticated term. I use it a lot. I see furrowed brows. This one has pepper too. Anybody else taste pepper in there? That's right. Some other spice. Okay. Now, what you your next assignment should yes? Clove. I'm non-committal. Actually. So your assignment, should you choose to accept it, is to take these three red wines and to place them on probably three of the circles there, and then lock in your answer. I don't know how we do that, but after about three or four more minutes, there'll be no moving those wine glasses around. Okay. Everybody made their choices? Yes, I see heads nodding. Yes, yes. Okay, we have one more trivia question. And that is, in California, if the label says Chardonnay, what percentage of that wine must be Chardonnay? In the bottle, what percentage of the liquid must be Chardonnay? A, 75%, B, 85%, C, 95%, or D, 100%. In California, because this changes by state. In California, if the label says Chardonnay, what percentage of the liquid in there must be Chardonnay? A, 75%, B, 85%, C, 95%, D, 100%. And then there's the tiebreaker question. In California, if the label says Napa Valley, what percentage of that liquid in there must be from Napa Valley? Or whatever viticultural area it is. Same answers. A, 75, B, 85, C, 95, D, 100. So the first one is the varietal. What percentage much of the varietal must be in there? And the second is the political designation, Napa Valley or Sonoma or whatever. What percentage must be in the grape or in the wine of that, you know, from that place? Okay, everybody got it? Everybody have the right answers. Have you noticed anybody looking on your papers? Yeah. Okay. So here's what we're going to do. We are going to go back through the wines and see how we did, how you did. I don't have any wine. Yeah. So, the wine you have for number one. So, how could you tell much difference in the color between number one and number two? Pardon?
More yellow.
More yellow. Okay. The aroma, the taste, They were different, obviously. So how many people have this as wine D? Or let's see, not D, what was D? How many have it as the green dot? Nobody? That's good. These are sharp people. Okay. Well, wine number one is the red dot, the Chardonnay. Yes? Everybody? Not everybody. I won't look. And that makes wine number two is the clear dot. So we all did really well. So let's move on to the reds. Retaste what you have for the third wine. Okay, now, could you tell this one strictly by color? Generally, if you get a wine that's that light, either it's been watered down, or it's a Pinot, or maybe a Sangiovese, a light one, or a Beaujolais, exactly. But you can narrow down your choices.
Why is it?
Why? One reason would be it has not as much. Well, the grapes don't give as much color. I mean, that's where the color comes from, is the grapes. And it's going to have less tannin, but that's a whole different ball of wax. We'll get to tannin later. So, wine, let's see, what is that? We're on... Yeah. Okay, so this one is, what is this, wine number three is the blue dot. We knew that, though, didn't we? Okay, and number four, what do we have for that one? And number four is the green dot. Did everybody get green dot for four? Well, this wine is, as you can tell, it's from Lodi. It's a Macchia is the winery, and all of the wines they make, and they make a lot of Zinfandels. And other types of things, but everything they make, they don't, instead of saying this is from this vineyard or this vineyard, they give it a name that has an O-U-S on the end. Like this one is Mischievous, and I've, you know, poured wines that were Generous, or they have I think it's a Petite Syrah that they call Bodacious, or there's one that's Generous, but they always have O-U-S on the end of it. But they're very full-flavored wines they have out there. Which leaves only one color dot, I think. So what do we got left? So taste the last one. Now, who said it was peppery or did...
Clove.
Pepper? That's a lot of the time people will identify that type of a taste in a Cabernet. So, how many people got all five wines right? It's almost everybody. Okay. I made it too. I could have had... You don't want to make it so hard. But, you know, it's less about, you know, I got all five of them right. It's more about being able to tell what you've got just by looking at it, by smelling it, and by tasting it. And it helps when you can taste a Pinot next to a Cabernet, next to a Zinfandel. And you can, if you do it in isolation, you sort of get an idea. But when you can taste them right beside each other, you get a little better idea of, you know, what the real differences are. So we are going to look at the trivia answers now. Here's where the rubber hits the road. We could pass our sheets around so you don't grade your own. No. Okay. Which is more sensitive in evaluating wine, the eyes, the nose, the tongue, or the ears? It's the nose. And it's leagues better than anything else you've got. The tongue tastes the four basic tastes that I talked about. You know, it's the sugar, the salt, the sweet, the bitter. Your nose can pick up thousands of different, identified thousands of different aromas and characteristics. And if you've ever had a meal when you have a cold, you know, and your nose is all plugged up and it doesn't taste like so wonderful, it's because you can't smell the food. It has a taste, but you can't really smell it, and so it loses the taste. So it's your nose. Then some would say, trick question number two, by law, what does the term reserve mean when you see it on the label of a U.S. wine? What are we saying down here? She says nothing. What do you all say? Means by law is the trick part. It means it doesn't mean anything by law. Generally, if it says reserve, you're going to have their best wine. But it is, as someone said, it's a marketing term with no legal force behind it. If I put out a wine and I only had one wine, I could call it my reserve wine. So the answer is D, don't mean nothing. Yes?
Does estate have a legal meaning?
Estate does. Let me see if I've got that back here somewhere.
I think it's the grapes are grown and produced.
Yeah, it's the same as if it said produced and bottled by. But as estate, generally, those grapes will be grown on the estate, and that's so. It is a meaningful term. Okay, question number three: as grape berries are maturing on the vine, does sugar content of the berries, what does it do? Increase. Okay. It does increase. That's sort of the whole point of it. The sugar increases and the acidity in the grape decreases. And so the decision to pick will be a combination of those plus what does the berry taste like to the vineyard manager. So as it increases, it builds up sugar. And it's the sugar that is turned into alcohol when it's mixed with the yeast. Yeast eats the sugar, produces the alcohol. That's the way it works. So if this year, it's getting kind of strange out there in the vineyards because there's not a lot of heat going on, at least yet. And if you don't get ripe grapes, then you don't get wonderful wine.
So oh, what's
yes.
What's best under those conditions?
What do you mean?
Well,
yeah, the best would be like a Pinot Chardonnay's not bad. Both of those are Burgundian wines. Riesling is the classic because that's the, like in Germany, Germany grows grapes right up to the edge of viticulture for wine, for grapes. There's a band. Here's the world. See, visualize the world. There's a band around the northern hemisphere and around the southern hemisphere where you can grow wine grapes. And right at the top of that band is Germany. Of course, with global warming, it's all changing, but maybe, who knows. We'll have great grapes from England. But Germany is right at the top of the edge of the viticulture, and that's where you grow, or they're growing a lot of the Riesling. And that's why, where in some countries they try to do one thing or the other, what they're trying to get in Germany is very sweet wines, without getting horribly technical. The more sugar, the sweeter the wine. Okay. But to get more sugar, you need more warmth to get the grapes. And that's what they don't have in Germany. And that's why they value sweet wines, because it's something you always value something you can't have. And they don't have warmth. And warmth makes sweet wines. So that's why, their very best wines, the Trockenbaren Auslese's and that sort of thing, are a product when something, when they have enough warmth to make it. So that's probably eight times more than you wanted to know about that. But Riesling is another one of those kinds of grapes that does well in cooler climates.
So there is sugar in wine.
Yes, there is sugar in wine. Most wines, like the wines we tasted here, there's basically no sugar in any of these wines. German wines, the ones that are like that, above cabinet level, are going to have a lot of sugar. But generally, you'll ferment all the sugar down to almost zero. So, number four. What's the main reason you should not store wine or other alcohol beverages in lead crystal containers for long periods of time? I won't read them. What do you think?
Lead poisoning.
What else? Any showy? Anybody think showy? No? No takers on that one? And it's true. The lady says they're not meant for long-term storage. The main reason is the lead poisoning. Yeah. So if you go into somebody's house and they've got, their lead crystal decanter and they want to pour a brandy or a scotch or whatever it is, you wouldn't have wine. Say delicately, how long has that been in there? Because alcohol leaches lead out of crystal. And then you've got, yes. Well, it'll be a month or something like that. I mean, if you have your decanter and you have it there a week, you're not going to get. And even if it's a month, it's not going to kill you. But lead poisoning is still lead poisoning. If you have wine in a decanter and you're certain, you pour it in there and you're serving it, but I wouldn't store it in there a long time. Yes.
Does all crystal have lead in it?
The question is, does all crystal have lead in it? All lead crystal has lead in it.
You can't tell by looking, or can you?
You can't tell by looking. You can tell. You have to be very careful though when you turn it upside down to read it, that there's nothing in the thing, because it'll all spell.
That would be embarrassing.
Yeah. There was Davis did a report on a brandy, and I guess the limit is 15 parts per billion of lead in whatever. And they had some brandy. I don't know if they did the test or they found it, but it had been there a long time. And there was 50,000 parts per billion. So that's generally not a good thing. Yeah, it was from China. So just be careful, and don't, you know, really don't store. You know, you'll see people with scotch, and these things are not good. It looks wonderful. I mean, decanters are just wonderful things. They really are. Yeah, I've got a. Yeah, says if you've got a teenager in the house, it becomes less and less powerful. Yes. Okay. So, question number 5: In California, if the label says Chardonnay, what percentage must be Chardonnay in that bottle? 75, 85, 95, or 100? Anybody for 100? 75 here. The great separator. This is wonderful. Well, it and I am not a big fan of this number. But the number is 75%. And you know, I think that's you gotta you know, read the label. Sometimes they'll say on the back, you know, this is 100% Chardonnay, but where it gets a little different is like if you have a red wine and you want to have what they call a maritage. So it's all of the Bordeaux blending varietals. And you've got Cabernet and you've got Merlot and you've got Petit Verdot or Malbec and whatever. And there's not 75% of any of them in there. Then you have to give it a name. You either call it red wine, or you give it a name like Le Pavot, or, you know, that's Peter Michael has their wonderful wine, Opus One. They give it a name that, you know, that they can sell, they can market with, without having to actually put a varietal right on the label. Anyway, 75%. Like it or not. And the tiebreaker, well, let's not do the tiebreaker yet.
What's the other 25%
usually? Something else. Seriously, you know. I hate to profile. It's not good to be a profiler. But you know, if you buy Chardonnay, if it says Chardonnay, and you're paying $6 a bottle, then the other 24% could be just anything. It could be Thompson. Well, it couldn't really be Thompson. That's not nice. But it could be, you know, any white wine.
So the Chardonnay,
that's 100%. Absolutely. It wasn't $6.
Can we talk about the Chardonnay? Was that aged in oak?
Yes.
Yeah.
The question is, was this particular Chardonnay aged in oak? This one is classic. There's two ways people are going with California Chardonnay now. This one is the traditional oaky buttery Chardonnay. It's got... But I don't think it's over the top, but it certainly is not shy on its oak and butter. The other path, because the oaky buttery, some people have gone, you know, you drink it and you think you've bitten into the cask. There's so much wood in there. So people are going to the unoaked Chardonnays, and there's a lot of them out there now that are fermented in stainless steel. And they can be wonderful. You taste more of the grape and less of the barrel. But they both have their uses. To me, if you've got an oaky buttery like this, and you have a chicken with cream sauce, it's perfect because the cream sauce brings out the butter, and they match up really well. But the unoaked Chardonnay is terrific with a light, like a fish, not without a cream sauce, or salads even. It can be wonderful. So anyway, that's another huge, long answer for... Yeah.
Like for a long time, people loved buttery
oaky. Yeah, it's swinging back the other way now.
Yeah.
But there are still people that like oaky buttery, and that's why they have different kinds.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have horse races, sort of. Not because of the wine, but yes.
There's so many different winemakers. How do you know what you're getting into before you even open it? I mean, you might just buy.
Criticism?
Oh, the point system.
That's right. So the question is, there are so many different wines, and there are, you know, so many different styles and winemakers, and how do you know what you're getting? There's a couple of different ways. One is you can go on to something like winespectator.com and look it up and see if it's got a review. If it's got a good review, generally, some wine salesman has stuck it up on the retail shelf, and it'll say 90 points, Robert Parker, Wine Spectator, Tanzer, or somebody. That's one way, and then you're taking their recommendation. One thing that I've found to be pretty good is if you find a good wine shop, and good wine shops generally mean that the people that are working there are very knowledgeable. And you can say, you know, well, they'll ask you. You'll say, I'm looking for a wine. Hopefully, you know, you'll know red or white. And they'll ask you, you know, what do you like? Do you like full-bodied wines? Do you like, or what are you going to have it with? You know, is it for Thanksgiving dinner or bat mitzvah or something? So, you know, somebody that works at a good wine store can be invaluable. And then, you know, don't let them get away. You know, follow them around to different stores.
You know what the truth is, though? Like, when you just said full-bodied wine, how many people here know what a full-bodied wine is? Like, what are you talking about?
Okay. Based on what you were drinking here, what the question is, what is a full-bodied wine? It's sort of like, what did the Supreme Court justice say? You know, what's pornography? I don't know, but I know it when I see it. So, a full-bodied wine would be this Zinfandel or this Cabernet. Generally, those are thought of as full-bodied wines. What was that?
High viscosity.
It's a wine you, when you taste it, you go, whoa. That's the technical definition. But like he says, a high viscosity wine, but something that really makes an impression on you. That's like
the Zinfandel.
I would say that's the fullest bodied, even more than the Cabernet, which is why we tasted it last. Generally, Zinfandels are not as pungent as a Cabernet, but this one is sort of different. There's a third way to answer your question about how do you know what to taste. Go to a lot of wine tastings. I mean, like this. I mean, this, you taste wines. If you see something that's like, whoa, this is terrific, and you say, well, I like Macchia, then, you know, nobody doesn't have a website, or everybody does have a website. And go to their website and then go to the winery, zip up to Napa, take a taxi or something. Don't drive. But that's the way, you know, that's the best way, is to taste it yourself and become familiar with your favorites and then buy by the case if you want, if you have a place to keep it. But don't store it in decanters. Question. Didn't everybody hear that? BevMo, Beverages and More. They have tasting nights. If there's one near you, I know there's one in San Rafael. And, you know, they have them in city here? They must. And she says they have tasting nights. You can go there and taste away. Okay. Any other questions? One here? The retail. The Fritz Chardonnay is 24. Paymarin, well, let me do this. I have some backup, some tasting notes. Well, no, that's different. Well, you could hand this out. Yes. This is a thing on the six S's of wine tasting. The Fritz Chardonnay is 100% Russian River. They made 5,100 cases of it. This is the largest production wine that we'll taste, that you tasted tonight. $24. The Riesling, it's 100% Riesling. It's from Marin County. It's Marin County's first Riesling. It's grown out near Nicasio, if that means anything, about 7 miles from the ocean. They made 475 cases of this. It's $26. And I don't know how they make money with 475 cases of anything. The Holly Pinot, it's 100% Pinot. It comes from the Ullman Vineyard on Vine Hill up in Sonoma, if you're familiar with that area. They made 381 cases of this wine, and it is $33. Pinots just in general are more expensive because they're a really difficult grape to grow. The Macchia Zinfandel, this one's the Mischievous. It's 100%. They didn't go 75% on this. It comes from the Lodi appellation, so it's in Lodi. And this one is $21. That is one huge deal. They made 1,500 cases of this. And the last one is the Owl Ridge Cabernet. It's from Sonoma County. They made 304 cases of this. And comes from two different vineyards up in Sonoma. And this one is $24. And I have three copies of tasting notes, so whoever's the fastest... and there was another question over here. Yes.
You mentioned four flavors: salt, sugar.
Oh, bitter and sweet.
And there's also umami.
Yep. Yeah. Well. The latest taste is called umami. That must be a Japanese word, but it's like mushrooms. I mean, are mushrooms sweet, salt, sour, or whatever the other one, a bitter? Not really. It's just sort of one of those kind of hard-to-describe things. It's kind of a catch-all. You're not going to get a lot of umami in the wines. You're not going to get any salt either. If you do, then you want to return that. But when you say bitter, that's the tannin. Tannic is the equivalent of the bitter. And theoretically, I mean, the old theory is that the sweet is on the front of your tongue, and then the bitter's on the sides, and where's the salt? Is it in the middle? I've forgotten. Yeah, front, the sides. So, anyway, different locations. There are other people now saying they have it's everywhere, so, you know, it's not that big a deal. If I would say, the question is, are any of these wines fruit forward? I would call the Zen the most fruit forward of these. I mean, it is just right forward in your face, and it's.
No, I'm wrong. It's 15.9. So,
Zinfandels in general are they ripen. I mean, they get lots and lots of sugar, so they will generally have more alcohol. But like this one, I mean, I think you may taste the alcohol. Was anybody offended by the alcohol in this thing? Okay. No, I mean that's legitimate. It's not a wimpy wine.
No.
But the trick with a good Zinfandel, even if it's high alcohol, is it's got the fruit to cover it up. And that's why you drink Zinfandels sooner. You don't age Zinfandels because over time what you lose is fruit. And if you lose the fruit here, you're going to get the alcohol. So I mean, that'd be years, but it's still there. You mean the taste?
The burn.
The burn fades with age also. Yes, ma'am.
On a lot of wine labels, you see all fine, especially with Zeds, you see all fine. Are any grapes in the all fine or only some grapes?
The question is, with Zinfandels, you see old vine. And I'm not sure there's actually a certain number of years that qualifies. But you'd think 75-ish years. But, you know, who knows? It could be 50. It's like reserve.
Are they good on old vines? You only see it with Zinfandels.
That's like saying, you know, how old can you be with a vine to grow Chardonnay? Know what? No, you can't have an old vine.
So that's
It's not a gimmick. I mean, they are old vines. Zinfandels, you know, they'll have some Zinfandels over 100 years. The vines are over 100 years old. You don't see vines that old with other grapes. And with the Zins, some of the older ones, they've been around since, you know, they were here before the new trellising systems and all that. They were called head prunes, so it's like a big bush. But does that answer your question? Yeah, I mean, you don't see the term old vine with anybody else, any other types. Cabs, but you know, it's kind of a Zinfandel term. Question back there. Explain it? Okay. Wants to talk about tannin. Tannin comes from the seeds in the skins during fermentation. That's one of my trick questions that I ask people. The difference between red and white grapes. You know, is it fermented before you take away the skins and the seeds and all that, or after? Well, you ferment red grapes with the skins and the seeds, and that's when the tannin gets into the mix. And it gives it structure, and it also gives you Do you know the term astringency? Yeah, you know that puckery, like you've got a rug in your mouth kind of feeling? That all comes from tannin, and that will fade over time. If you taste any of the Bordeaux wines when they're released and they're new, and you try to drink those things, and it's like, yeah, they taste. They have the fruit, but they are so puckery. You just end up like, yeah, not good. The reason that and the more you drink of it, the more it tastes like that. Are we running out of time?
Well, we have to be gone by 8.
Okay.
Just so there's time for like one, maybe two questions, and then
we have to give away the prizes.
Oh,
so I just that is, I'll just do the astringency thing. Is what happens is the tannin gloms onto protein, and protein is in your saliva, so it gloms together. You swallow it, and then there's no more saliva there. So when you get more tannin, what you're feeling is your tongue rubbing against the inside of your mouth, and there's no solution there to, you know, let it slide around, so you feel this fuzzy thing, and that's because the tannin has done away with it. So, let me go ahead and ask this question. Add up the number of wines you got right, and add up the number of trivia questions you got right. I know that's a tough one. You got it? Everybody finished that big addition thing? Okay, how many have 10? 1, 2, 3. Okay, very nice. Oh, 4? Oh, she was cleaning up a spill, and that included the tiebreaker, right? Good. So the people that got all of them right, we have the tiebreaker, which is, oh, I see. The tiebreaker was the Napa Valley question. And I haven't answered that one yet? Okay, thank you for keeping. So the answer, the four people, right? The answer for that one is 85%. That is B. Sorry. So if it says Napa Valley, nobody got it? Any of the four people, stand up. I don't know who I'm talking to here. Or can you stand up? Okay. 1, 2, 3. Lady here, 3. And were you 1?
No, I thought I did. Oh, I counted a tiebreaker, but I
wasn't. Okay. So you two both have tiebreaker, got everything all right, right? Including the tiebreaker.
No.
Did you get? Nobody got the tiebreaker. That's not fair. A what? I know. Well, I have 2 prizes. So, but the other 2 people, well, if they didn't get the tiebreaker, then there's 4 people, right?
No, just 2.
Oh, it just was, you were just faking. Okay. Okay, well, see me afterwards and we'll take care of that. Anybody like wine charms?
No.
Yes? You know what they are?
Yeah.
You put them on the little, you put them on, and they're all like wine things. Okay.
What else you got?
I also have a wine grape varietal table. So it shows. So it's got all the different grapes, and it'll tell you how intense they are and all that sort of thing.
What else you got?
Pretty. Or, I know what I'll do. We'll do both. Oh, like my shirt. 8 o'clock. Okay. So, okay, write this down. This is just for your reference. This is how you can figure out how many glasses of wine you should drink. And be able to drive. So this, the number of, and we're talking about 12% alcohol, which is a normal glass of wine.
12% alcohol wine. Are any of those 12% alcohol?
Yes.
Yeah. Which one?
The Riesling. 12%, a 4-ounce glass of wine. So it's like a standard glass of wine. Equals 0.08% times your weight divided by 4. I'll say it again. The number of drinks that you can have in, like, in an hour is 0.08, as in 8%, 0.08 times your weight divided by 4. So, like, a 175-pound person can have 3.5 glasses. Yeah, but these are four ounce glasses. Well, no. Anyway, that's just, it's a good number for you to keep in, because you can calculate it for yourself and then just have it stored away somewhere. And if you eat food, you can cut that number, you know, you can have more wine because it really cuts the alcohol down. So that is it. I hope you had a good time. And picked up some pointers, and thank you. And thank you to the Commonwealth Club, and Kathy, thank you. And thank you to the volunteers. Appreciate it. Come back.